Okay, last poem and then we'll finish. So let's just read it and then I'll...
Not ideas about the thing, but the thing itself, by Wallace Stevens. At the earliest ending of winter, in March, a scrawny cry from outside seemed like a sound in his mind. He knew that he heard it, a bird's cry, at daylight or before, in the early March wind. The sun was rising at 6, no longer a battered panache above snow. It would have been outside. It was not from the vast ventriloquism of sleep's faded papier-mâché. The sun was coming from outside. That scrawny cry. It was a chorister whose sea preceded the choir. It was part of the colossal sun, surrounded by its choral rings, still far away. It was like a new knowledge of reality.
Wonderful. So I wanted to end with this poem because this is a poem of spiritual rebirth. So we've had all these different... I've been thinking that death is too big for our minds. So everything we've got about death is about belief, not about knowledge. So we started with Emily Dickinson with this very strange, mystical... You don't know what she believes about it. Then you've got Frost believing that it's like, you know, that traditional trope of death being like the darkest sleep, but doesn't know that. Then you've got Wilbur saying, you know, it could be like, who knows, I don't know, but it could be like this measuring worm who doesn't know it, but going to have wings. Then you've got Larkin's absolute insistence it's total extinction forever, the anesthetic from which no one comes round. Then you've got this wonderful, very late Wallace Stevens poem. Wallace Stevens is a direct contemporary of Robert Frost. Their poetry is antipodes from each other. They read each other all their life. They famously argued. I think Stevens said to Frost, he said, the problem with your poems, Robert, is that you write about things. And Frost said to Stevens, the problem with your poems is you write about bric-a-brac. Famous. There's a lovely photograph of them two together. It looks slightly similar. Sort of. Stevens, again, got married, a bit like Frost in this way, he got married young, fell in madly in love, really didn't work. His parents were very against the marriage. He walked out on his parents. The marriage never worked. They're very, very unhappy. Nobody really quite knows what was going on. He looked after her a lot. Again, people think she might have been agoraphobic or something, or depressed, or nobody quite knows. She wouldn't go out, for instance. He said in some letters, I'd like to meet you, but I need to go home and look after my wife. They had one daughter, Haley. Haley? Holly. She, interestingly, did exactly the same, married someone that her parents disapproved of. She split off from them for a while, and that marriage went wrong as well. He was an insurance salesman, worked in insurance, in surety bonds. He was a national expert of surety bonds, which is like incredible. I was talking to Amla Vadra about it. It's like the most pernickety lawyer thing to do. He said it's like he was telling me they're in killers, surety bonds. They're like the driest possible work you could do. He did it. He did that work long after he needed to. He didn't take retirement. He could have by then. It took him much longer to get well known, but he didn't dare stop working because it was whilst he was working that the poems came. He'd write the poems in his head on the walking to work and walking back, and they'd go up in his room and write them. Most of the people he worked with didn't know he wrote poems. He's a rather buttoned up man. It's very difficult to get close to Stevens. Very private inner world. At the earliest ending of winter, in March, a scrawny cry from outside seemed like a sound in his mind. Fantastic start. He knew that he had heard it, a bird's cry, at daylight, or before, in the early March wind. The sun was rising at 6, no longer a battered panache above snow. It would have been outside. It was not from the vast ventriloquism of sleep's folded, faded papier-mâché. The sun was coming from outside. That scrawny cry, it was a chorister whose sea preceded the choir. It was part of the colossal sun, surrounded by its coral rings, still far away. It was like a new knowledge of reality. Now, this is a masterpiece of the poem, and it's too late to go into it in great depth. But the thing with Stevens' work is constantly this problem of inside and outside. Does the world, is there any relationship between consciousness and life? He often uses bird song, because the birds are not singing for you. They don't give a monkeys about you. I remember once seeing an owl on the South Bank. Someone had one, a huge owl, and they were throwing bits of food for it. It would flap and jump on the food, massive owl. And there were lots and lots of people watching this owl. And what struck me was that the owl had no interest in it at all. He was just completely focused on this bit of meat. You know, we didn't exist for the owl. We easily sentimentalize nature, but nature would be better without us, largely. We have damaged, you know, we've taken up so much space. Stevens was sort of, all of his poetry, is there any meaning? His mother was very religious. They used to sing hymns on a Sunday night. His mother used to read him chapters from the Bible every night. He thought that the death of God, which, you know, he didn't believe in God, was the great moment in history. And he thought that the rest of his life was trying to find some substitute for God, as it were, find some meaning. Because if consciousness and world don't meet in any way, then human beings are just a kind of... they're just a sort of chemical reaction that comes into being and goes and has no relationship with birds and trees and so on. So he's constantly worrying about, is there meaning in life or not? So that cry that I heard, how do I know I heard it even? I think it's from outside, but I have no knowledge of outside. He's like a Kantian philosopher. He's knowing very clearly, how can I know outside? At the earliest ending of winter, in March, a scrawny cry from outside seemed like a sound in his mind. Yeah, seemed like a sound. Every time in Stevens' poems, all these qualifications, at the earliest ending of winter, in March, a scrawny cry from outside seemed like a sound in his mind. He knew that he had heard it, a bird's cry, at daylight, or before, in the early March wind. You see how there's all these qualifications. Is that true or not? You say you've heard it, but it seemed like a cry in my mind. You know, when you wake up, he's just waking up. It does seem like a cry. And then he says, it was not from the vast ventriloquism of sleep's faded papier-mâché. The sun was coming from outside. It would have been outside. So he's trying to locate this simple sound. Is it from the... What relationship has the mind got to the world? If there isn't one, then life is meaningless. Is there a relationship or not? His whole question is, does imagination, what we would call imagination, does it embrace the world, or is it just like a fantasy? Then right at the end, all these questions, it seemed about, was it inside, was it outside? Then, really unusually for him, he suddenly changes that scrawny cry, you know, which is, again, mixing up scrawny is something, it's a body shape, it's not, you can't have a sound that's a scrawny, and yet it works perfectly, doesn't it? Describes a bird and describes the bird and describes the sound in one word, which is incredible. That scrawny, so you get, and I would imagine he's got, I think he's probably got Hardy's Thrush somewhere in the back of his mind, you know, that famous poem, what's it called? The Missile Thrush or something like that. Written on New Year's Eve of 1900, on New Year's Eve 1899 to 1900. And the thrush is called Scrawny, I think. That scrawny cry, then dash, it was a chorister whose C preceded the choir. So it's the first sound before the dawn chorus. It was part of the colossal sun, surrounded by its choral rings, still far away. It was like, so you won't affirm it, it was like a new knowledge of reality. So he's gone right, and these late poems go right the way into this sort of blank despair that you get in the late poems. And yet he goes all the way into that, and he discovers not Orbade's and Larkin's pessimism and nihilism. He discovers, without God, without Wilbur's angel, hidden within the larvae, he discovers a new knowledge of reality, except for he's got so much integrity as a poet that he won't affirm it. He says, it was like. And all of that poem, it was like it came from outside, but it was also like it came from inside. And I can't work out whether it came from outside or inside. But this time, I'm going to say it was a chorister whose C preceded the choir. It was part of the colossal sun. The sun for Stevens is like a classic image, one of Stevens' image for reality itself, surrounded by its choral rings, which is beautiful. It's like, you know, God in his heaven with all the angels around it that you sometimes see in ancient pictures, still far away. So you won't quite go all that way, still far away. It was like a new knowledge of reality. So let's finish with just hearing that again and then we'll close.
Not ideas about the thing, but the thing itself. At the earliest ending of winter, in March, a scrawny cry from outside seemed like a sound in his mind. He knew that he heard it, a bird's cry, at daylight or before, in the early March wind. The sun was rising at 6, no longer a battered panache above snow. It would have been outside. It was not from the vast ventriloquism of sleep's faded papier-mâché. The sun was coming from outside. That scrawny cry. It was a chorister whose C preceded the choir. It was part of the colossal sun, surrounded by its choral rings, still far away. It was like a new knowledge of reality.
Fabulous. What a great way to end. It was like a new knowledge of reality. That's what we're about, isn't it? We're trying to something that's like a new knowledge of reality. Thank you very much. Thank you.